drowned at the bottom of a California lagoon. This last leap had brought that prediction frighteningly close. The glass walls of the Matrans chamber had been a deep red. The six friends had all entered the small room, sitting down on the floor of polished metal discs, readying themselves for the jump. All the references for controlling the destination had long been lost. All any of them knew was that the act of closing the gateway's inner door triggered the mechanism and sent them hurtling on a trip into the unknown. Ryan had been the first to recover consciousness, awakening with the familiar feeling that his brains had been splintered and put through a mixer, then hastily reassembled. His stomach churned, and his eye pained him. For an instant, everything felt like all the other Matrans jumps. He couldn't breathe. The air was agonizingly thin, and his lungs sucked frantically for oxygen that wasn't there. He tried to yell, but it wouldn't come out of his throat. None of the others showed any signs of coming around from the jump, but in the dim light, Ryan could see that all of them were breathing fast and shallow. The pattern of discs was different on the floor and on the ceiling, and the chamber seemed smaller than the others. The walls were dark blue glass, and only the dimmest light penetrated. The moment Ryan Carter began his struggle to stand up, he knew this gateway was frighteningly different than the others. His body felt oddly light, and he stayed on hands and knees, gagging, a thin worm of yellow bile dangling from his open mouth.
Gotta fucking move from...
He crawled over the outstretched legs of Lori Quint, snagging his pants on the tinkling silver spurs on her crimson boots. The effort of moving from one side of the chamber to the other made him pant as if he just sprinted a mile over a furrowed field. Ryan found himself swaying, almost floating, as if the gravity in the gateway had been reduced to near zero. He fumbled for the handle of the door, his fingers clumsy. It seemed as if all sensation had gone from his body, and he staggered sideways, banging his shoulder hard on the wall. Ryan heard someone moaning and coughing behind him. His guess was Jack Lauren, but there wasn't time to check. After an infinity of effort, he managed to wrench the door open, revealing the familiar small room beyond it. The farther door was also open, and Ryan glimpsed flickering lights and comp consoles. The gateways were triggered by the closing of the door, operating on a random principle. With the last of his fading power, he succeeded in slamming it shut once more. Gasping, his eyesight dimming, Ryan dropped to his knees, conscious even at that moment of the peculiar slowness of his fall. The chamber lights began to dance and glow again, and the blackness clawed its way across the front of his brain like a tendrilled web. When he'd come around, the sickness had been far worse than ever before. All of them, except Jack Lauren, had thrown up, and the chamber floor was awash with vomit. Oddly, Ryan was the only one with any recollection of their stopover, and he hadn't any idea of where they'd gone.
Doc, did Cerberus ever have any way weird gateways?
I fear that my present intestinal incapacity renders that question difficult to respond to, my dear Ryan. Perhaps some other time?
It was like I was floating, Doc. The air tasted thinned down like double repure water. Couldn't breathe, and I only just made it to Matranzas. At least the air's safe here.
Doc looked puzzled. He shook his head, eyes squeezed tightly shut.
Floating, my dear Ryan? How can one float? And air that is thin? It's truly the most arrant taradiddle I ever did here.
For a moment, Doc's eyes opened, and Ryan saw the fierce intellect that still blazed.
Unless, of course, there was some talk of a gateway that was to be built upon...
Lori, rolling her head on his lap, tiny bubbles of yellow froth hanging on her lips, interrupted him. She reached for Doc's hand, breaking the brief run of his concentration. Ryan leaned down over the old man's shoulders.
Come on, Doc.
Excuse me?
You were saying about what you thought the bastard gateway might have been?
I was.
Yes, you were.
By the three Kennedys, but my head feels as though some knave's been dancing a polka inside it. I fear I can recall nothing of what I was saying. Do forgive me, Ryan.
Sure, Doc. Sure.
Whatever Doc had been rambling about, it was probably something else to keep on the mental back burner. There had been something about that dark blue gateway that had been...
like nothing on Earth.
The main power plant for the redoubt was only running at about half supply. From the cracks in the concrete walls, it was obvious there'd been a lot of seismic movements from the nuking, and well over half of the lights in the fortress had malfunctioned. The heating was barely enough to hold off the chill outside. Unlike some of the other redoubts that Ryan and his party had encountered, this one in Upper New York State was in excellent condition, well-preserved and swept clean. Most of the main storage areas were empty, as though there'd been sufficient warning to evacuate them. While the others stayed together, recovering from the double mat trans jump, Jack Lauren went off on his own, scavenging for food, weapons, and anything that might be useful. There were only a half dozen sections that hadn't been emptied in the entire set of linked caverns. Some held self-heats, some clothes. Only one of them had been used for armaments. Between them, the six companions had a varied range of weapons. Ryan Cotter was delighted to come across an opened case of ammunition for his G-12. Since they all traveled light, he was beginning to worry whether he might actually run out of the unusual caseless ammo for the lightweight 50-shot gray blaster. He also found magazines of 15 rounds of 9mm bullets for the Sig Sauer P226 handgun that he'd carried for years on his hip. It was complemented by an 18-inch steel panga honed to razor sharpness. J.B. Dix picked up some ammunition for his mini-Uzi, but couldn't find anything for his hand blaster, his trusty Steyr-AUG 5.6mm. Not even including his firearms, the armorer was a walking arsenal. He still had some pieces of high-explosive plas left, sewn into his clothes and hidden in his high-laced combat boots. There were a couple of thin-bladed flensing knives, as well as the beautiful Techna knife he'd found back in West Lowellton. Christy Roth, in her knee-length fur coat, so deep black that it was almost blue, stocked up on bullets for her silvered Heckler & Koch P7A13 handgun, slipping a couple of the 13-round mags into her pockets. Lori scarcely ever used her blaster, a delicate little pearl-handled Walther PPK. Despite Ryan's warnings that it was only a toy gun and that you needed more than a .22 caliber to stop a man, the tall teenager clung stubbornly to her pretty pistol. Jack Lauren went to the opposite extreme, hefting a massive satin-finished .357 Magnum that looked absurdly huge in his small fist, but that didn't stop him from making lethal use of the big blaster. It wasn't very surprising that Doc Tanner wasn't able to find any ammunition for his own blaster, a gun that was almost as eccentric in appearance as the old man himself, and only a couple of years older. It was a twin-barreled Lamah. The large barrel was bored out to take a single scattergun round, while the other barrel fired one of 9 36 caliber rounds. The Lamah, providing it didn't burst, could be utterly devastating. Doc also carried an ebony walking stick with a silver lion's head on its top, which could be pulled apart to reveal a slim rapier blade. In the depleted armory, none of the six would find themselves any new weapons, but they at least found something that was somewhat useful. The last guards who'd been on duty in the redoubt had left their blankets and bedding behind. The sheets had long rotted into dry flakes of powdery material, but the blankets remained, thick and dark brown, with the faded letters USFNY in one corner. The entire group had finally recovered from the ordeal of the double jump. Doc was sleeping like a baby on a tattered mattress, one arm draped across Lori's slender body. Jack was curled up under a pile of blankets, his mane of silky white hair drifting across the coarse material like wind-blown spume. JB slept on his side, fedora perched over his eyes, one hand gripping the butt of his blaster. Ryan and Christy had dragged a couple of mattresses together, covering them with blankets. It was undoubtedly safe to sleep without posting a guard in the redoubt. They were almost certainly the first living creatures in the place for 100 years.
Warm enough, lover?
Christy nodded. She'd peeled off her khaki coveralls, folding them neatly at the bottom of their makeshift bed. Her cowboy boots stood alongside them. The overhead neon strips, that still worked, threw pallid light, glinting off the silver chiseled toes and silver leather falcons that ornamented the designer boots. The only thing that marred their elegance were the splashes of gray mud and the dappled, darker patches of dried blood around the heels and the sides of the soles. Ryan took a chance on undressing, breaking one of his own cardinal rules. He'd slit the bottom of his pants so that he could pull them off over his combat boots. Carefully, he ranged his weapons alongside the makeshift bed. Christy lay on her left side, facing away from him, and he cuddled against her spoon fashion, feeling suddenly aroused as he pressed snugly into the strong curve of her buttocks. For a moment, she responded to his pressure, then half turned toward him.
Sorry, lover. I know it's not the most original excuse, but I really do have a bastard of a headache from the jump.
Yeah. I guess I don't feel at my steel-breaking best either. The jumps are getting worse. I wish I knew where the hell we ended up on that one today. One of these days, if we're not careful, we're gonna end up reconstituted under a million tons of mountain.
Would be a damned quick way to go.
The idea made her start to giggle, making her body press harder against him, with the inevitable result. Afterward, Christy cradled him in her arms.
Ace cure for a headache, lover.
In one of the stone-walled rooms near the main entrance of the redoubt, they found a shelf filled with empty backpacks. At JB's suggestion, everyone in the party took one, filling it with spare ammo and self-heats. Each of them also carried a couple of clear plastic cans of spring water, the kind that had a ring-pull opener. At some point in time, a round button had been kicked under a metal cabinet. Jack Lauren picked it up and pinned it to the lapel of his ragged leather and canvas camouflage jacket. It was bright red and carried a picture of a helmet. The gold-lettered word said simply, "Go 49ers." The 352 code opened the outer door, revealing a morning of bright sun bursting from a sky tinted purple. The chem cloud storm of the previous evening had vanished. The temperature was a few degrees above freezing. Far on the other side of the wooded valley, Christy spotted a hunting bird circling on a thermal, its great wings spread wide. Its wingspan looked to be about 15 feet. The bird was the first sign of life they'd seen since the jump. The first problem to overcome was to find a way down from the redoubt. Inside the main door, Lori had found a plan of the entire fortress, with its corridors lined in blue, the exit marked in orange. There was only one exit shown. Ryan checked both ends of the broken roadway. The drop was sheer for about 40 feet, and he could make out the remains of tracks beaten through the scrub.
That's what's kept the place clean. Unless you had a rope launcher, you'd never get up that face. It's smoother than Jack's chin.
For an old man with only one eye, Ryan, you got a fucking big mouth.
It's just a joke, son. Just a joke.
See me laughing, Ryan?
When friends fall out, then their enemies make merry.
Need some fixed lines up here. Then we have to find a way of making sure nothing and nobody gets in while we're away.
Ryan stood a moment, looking out across the wilderness.
Anyone had any thoughts about where we're going?
Let's have a look around.
The wind was still strong, tugging at them as they stood on the broad ledge. Christy tied back her long crimson hair to keep it out of her eyes.
You know anything about this place, Doc? Where we landed?
Upper New York, I believe you said, my dear fellow. Then that must be the Hudson.